So today we're looking at Hosea chapters 1, 2, and 3. It's all about Hosea and Gomer. Now this is going to be interesting. We're covering Hosea's love story today as it unfolds over three chapters. Three chapters, 3 points. It plays out kind of like a classic boy meets girl love story. It's a cliche storyline where a boy meets a girl, the boy loses the girl, and then the boy gets the girl again. Two examples of famous boy meets girl storylines. Firstly, Romeo and Juliet. That's a classic. Boy, Romeo meets girl, Juliet. Romeo loses Juliet due to their crazy families. Romeo gets Juliet again, sort of, because she's in a tomb and all that. And the second example, the story of Noah. That's right, Noah and Ali from The Notebook. Boy, Noah, Calhoun, and girl, Ali, fall desperately in love, but her parents don't approve. Noah loses Ali by going off to war, and it seems like their love is over. So Ali and James get together. But then Noah returns to their small town years later as Ali is about to get married. And pretty quickly, Noah gets Ali again. The story of Hosea and Gomer follows a similar storyline. It follows that classic boy meets girl, boy loses girl, boy gets girl again. But Hosea's love story is quite a bit different from that. In fact, it's very unlike the love stories that we hear about today. It's different in a few ways. And firstly, Hosea is 100% real. He's not just a character in his story. He's not another cliche. This really happened about 3,000 years ago. Many, many, many years before the cliche even existed. Hosea is 100% real, right? Real bloke. He was a real prophet in Israel from the 8th century BC. That's way after Moses, way after King David's time, a couple hundred years after Solomon's kingship. Hosea prophesied during the decline and fall of the northern kingdom of Israel in the 8th century BC. Secondly, Hosea's love story, while being really full on, and even though it's really uncomfortable, Hosea's story is actually the secondary story in the book of Hosea. Hosea's story is big, but God's story is even bigger. Hosea's story is shocking, but God's story is even more shocking. Hosea's story makes you pause, but God's story here will stop you in your tracks. Hosea's story takes the back seat as we see God's story unfolding for us here in chapters 1 to 3 and through the rest of the book. And seeing this truly as a story about God, with Hosea as part of it, it helps us to understand the rest of the book and helps us to understand just what the prophet Hosea was sent to do. If you already know about Hosea and his unlikely love story, if you've already heard the story, if you think it's kind of predictable, I want you to hear this story again with fresh ears. Read it with a clean slate and really get into the way that it unfolds. You know, it's really well written. It's really compelling, and part of God's message to us here is wrapped up in the way that it's written. It's wrapped up in the way that the story is told. You could easily summarize the storyline of Hosea, his love story, like this, and it's actually the outline of this 20-minute sermon. Chapter 1, boy meets girl, Hosea marries Gomer, God chose Israel. Chapter 2, boy loses girl, Gomer loses Hosea, Israel is unfaithful to God. And chapter 3, boy gets girl again, Hosea gets Gomer again, and God promises Israel again. And you could summarize Hosea's love story like that, and Hosea himself could have written it like that, but instead, we get a crazy story. Chapters 1 and 3, we get a picture of Hosea's relationship with Gomer, his marriage, his kids, the breakup, and the remarriage. And then, in chapter 2, sandwiched between chapters 1 and 3, we get this long speech. It's a bumpy ride, and it's supposed to be. Try not to be too wise about Hosea chapters 1 to 3. Try to get your head into Hosea's head. Try to get into these unlikely love stories, both Hosea's love story and God's love story, and this book will come alive for you. So let's get started. Chapter 1, Boy meets girl. Hosea marries Gomer. God chose Israel. And we looked at chapter 1 last week, but for the sake of the story, we'll cover it again briefly now. It's a messed up story if there ever was one. Basically, God tells Hosea, the prophet, to go and marry a promiscuous woman. Now that's a polite way of saying it, a promiscuous woman. I know there's heaps less polite words to describe a woman like this. Her name is Gomer. And that's not a very attractive name. Kind of adds to the story, right? Gomer, the promiscuous woman, not a likely candidate in Hosea's love story. But Hosea is obedient to God, so Hosea marries Gomer. I wonder what that wedding was like. Hosea, the prophet of God, marrying Gomer, a promiscuous woman. One side of the aisle is his side, the other side is her side. It would feel wrong. Like, why is he marrying her? How uncomfortable. And then in the years to come, they have 3 kids. I wonder what the kids were like, since mum and dad are such different people. They know if they want help, go to dad. If they want to get away with something, go to mum. Dad is strict, but he's always there for them. Mum is relaxed, but never around. I'm not sure what it was really like, but it's uncomfortable. You feel like grabbing Hosea by the shoulders and giving him a good shake. What are you doing? In this love story, that's how boy meets girl. But in the larger story, in the bigger picture, God is making a point. God is saying that the covenant that he has made with his people, when he chose them, the relationship that God has with his people, is as if God had married a promiscuous nation. Just as Hosea is tied to the promiscuous Gomer, God is tied to his promiscuous people. The perfect God, creator of the universe, immutable, inscrutable God, tied to Israel. The wonky, unpredictable Israelites, always turning from God. How uncomfortable. And so Hosea and Gomer's 3 children are given names that describe what God will do. The eldest is named Jezreel because in Jezreel Valley, God will destroy the kingship of Israel. Then their daughter named Not Loved because God will no longer show his love to Israel. Then their youngest son named Not My People because God's people are no longer his. Now that is uncomfortable. You feel like grabbing God somehow by the shoulders and giving him a shake, like, come on, what are you doing? Why are you joined to these people? They're unfaithful. God's relationship with his people is so broken at this point, and it's all because they're unfaithful. God's going to destroy their kingship, withdraw his love for them, and no longer call them his people. This is one weird love story. It's the one-sided love affair. Hosea is demonstrating inobedience in his own life, but God makes his choice of people, knowing full well what Israel were like. God willingly enters this one-sided love affair with his people, knowing what they're like. What sort of God does that? He knew what was to come, and he promised himself to them anyway. Even after naming Hosea's children Jezreel, Not Loved, and Not My People, God renews his promise to his people. In verse 10 we read, "Yet the Israelites will be like the sand on the seashore, which cannot be measured or counted. In the place where it was said to them, 'You are not my people,' they will be called, not my people, but children of the living God." And how will God accomplish this? Verse 11 tells us that God's promises are fulfilled through his leader, the leader of all God's people. Hosea here isn't told who the leader might be, but I think I might know. Anyway, let's move on in the love story to chapter 2. Boy loses girl. Gomer loses Hosea. Israel unfaithful to God. Chapter 2 is written really differently from chapters 1 and 3. In your Bible, you can probably notice that the layout of the text changes. It looks more like a psalm or like some poetry, and that's because this middle part of the story is one long quotation. This quotation develops the tracing of the story from where it left off in chapter 1. And because it's written differently, it feels different when we read it. It feels like we've moved from being above the story, where we see the events and hear the facts, to being in the story, up close with Hosea. We've moved from seeing the picture of Hosea and Gomer and the kids to being face to face with Hosea. It's like we're with him in his home, in the aftermath of Hosea and Gomer's breakup. Chapter 2 starts off really heavy. We imagine Hosea, who cannot even speak to Gomer, talking to his kids about her. Now, for me, this is all in my imagination. But some listening now will know this experience firsthand. A father and mother who cannot speak to each other. So the kids are used as sounding boards or even messengers across the boundaries of a broken marriage. In this marriage, Gomer has not been faithful. She's had other children with other men, and how could she do that? How could she throw it all away like that? And so now, face to face with Hosea, we can see a broken man saying to his children, chapter 2, verse 2, "Rebuke your mother, rebuke her, for she is not my wife, and I am not her husband. Let her remove the adulterous look from her face and the unfaithfulness from between her breasts. Otherwise, I will strip her naked and make her as bare as on the day she was born. I will make her like a desert, turn her into parched land, and slay her with thirst. I will not show my love to her children, because they are children of adultery. Their mother has been unfaithful and has conceived them in disgrace." If we were to follow the storyline of the boy meets girl, this part would be girl loses boy, because Gomer has intentionally lost Hosea. Hosea married a promiscuous woman, and she became a promiscuous wife. Clearly, Gomer had destroyed their marriage and broken their family. But in chapter 2, as we read through this extended quotation, this really strange thing happens. The imagery kind of twists bit by bit. It's still written from the perspective of a husband to his wife, but the image is mingled between relational infidelity and divine infidelity. We have the image of Gomer thinking she'd be better off to go back to Hosea, and we have religious images of giving silver and gold to false gods known as Baals. We have the image of Gomer cut off from Hosea, and religious images of the religious festivals for other gods. And this weird picture that forms in chapter 2 comes to a T in verse 13. Now, we assume this chapter was about Hosea, that Hosea was speaking. And the things in the chapter very likely did happen between Hosea and Gomer. But have a look at verse 13 with me, because it's not Hosea speaking here. In chapter 2, verse 13, we read, "I will punish her for the days she burned incense to the Baals," as the false gods, "the days when she decked herself with rings and jewelry and went after her lovers. But me she forgot, declares the Lord." This quotation in chapter 2 is not the words of Hosea about his unfaithful wife. These are the words of God about his unfaithful people. We weren't in Hosea's house, face to face with Hosea. We were face to face with God this whole time. And so all of what we feel for Hosea, we should have felt for God. All of what we thought of Gomer, we should have thought of God's people. This is what I was talking about when I said the meaning of this story is wrapped up in how it's written. It's a bumpy ride, and it's supposed to be. For the original audience, this chapter would have been crushing. Imagine the Israelites when they hear about Gomer's unfaithfulness. Oh, how dare she? How could she? But then they realize that they are Gomer, that this is God's declaration about them. They themselves were unfaithful to their God. They are the unfaithful ones. But our God was still faithful. His promise to them still stood. And so the second half of chapter 2, from verse 14 to the end, it's totally different. It's a remarkable change. Verse 14 says, "Therefore, I am now going to allure her, to lead her into the wilderness and speak tenderly to her." That's a huge shift in God's attitude. He doesn't cast his people away or have them destroyed. God goes after his people. Each of the verses is full of God's promises to his people. It's amazing. Skim your eyes over verses 14 to 23 and look at all God's promises. Look for the words, I will. God promised, I will, I will, I will. I counted 14 times. God says, I will. Despite all that Israel has done to betray God, God still promises them that he will. In these words, from God to his unfaithful, undeserving people, all we can say is that our God is faithful, our God is loving, and our God is gracious. And that brings us to chapter 3. Chapter 3, boy gets girl again, Hosea gets Gomer again, God promises Israel again. Here we actually see what happened to Hosea and Gomer. It's important to see that Hosea's actions haven't been dictating the actions of God, but actually God's actions have been dictating Hosea's actions. God chooses the Israelites, so Hosea is told to marry Gomer. The Israelites are unfaithful to God, and so too Gomer is unfaithful to Hosea. And here in verse 1, Hosea is told to love Gomer again, just as God has loved the Israelites. In verses 2 and 3, we read about how the boy gets the girl again. There's an ending to this messed up love story of Hosea and Gomer. We read that Hosea buys Gomer back, and if Gomer can get her act together, everyone will live happily ever after. I don't think you're supposed to see this story as fully finished. It's supposed to seem open-ended. The future is still wildly unpredictable. I'd like to add the words to be continued to the end of verse 3, but adding words to the Bible is not a very good idea. Following the end of the Hosea and Gomer love story, we get a similar ending to the story of God and the Israelites. But here, the ending is much less open-ended. We're told in verse 5 that the Israelites will eventually return and seek the Lord their God and David their king. Which is interesting because King David at this point has been dead for a couple hundred years. Perhaps the King David is the promised king from 2 Samuel chapter 7. The promised king in the family line of David who will reign forever. God's loving plan for his people here in Hosea 3 and still today finds its final stage in the kingship of a King David figure. The King David figure which Jesus embodied. Right from the start, it's been a one-sided love story. The story of Hosea and Gomer is a one-sided love story. The story of God and Israel is a one-sided love story. The story of God and us is a one-sided love story. It's so one-sided. You and I are like Gomer, more like the Israelites, who waver and falter and stumble and sin. Even as Christians who know God, we go our own way. But in the story of God's one-sided love for his people, there is hope. Not in ourselves, but in God's faithfulness, in God's love, in God's graciousness, and in Jesus, the Hosea to our Gomer. Hosea the prophet, he had a very strange task. Not only was he told to speak the words of God to an unfaithful nation, he had to live the life of God, loving Gomer through unfaithfulness. When you think about it, Jesus is quite like Hosea in this living out the life of God. But unlike Hosea, whose love for his unfaithful wife was just an image of God's love, Jesus' love for us in dying on the cross was itself God's very own act of love for his unfaithful people. Jesus' life, death, and resurrection is God's very own act of love, which saves us from our unfaithfulness. Hosea's love story with Gomer, it's the secondary story here. It's in the background of the main story. And so too are our stories, your story and mine, everyone else's. We're all part of a much bigger story, the one-sided story of God's love for his people. God's faithful love for an unfaithful world. That's the bigger picture. Hosea's story would be totally misunderstood if not for its place in the story of God's love for his people. And just the same, the stories of our lives and our daily experiences, they're only rightly understood when they're placed in the story of God's love for us. Your life is in God's hands. And in God's one-sided love for his people, there is hope. Hope in God's faithfulness, in God's love, and in God's graciousness. And in Jesus, the Hosea to our Gomer. Thank you for your time.